This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Teresa Wills. In an effort to get more people who are addicted to opioids into treatment, the West Virginia Department of Health and Human Resources has awarded a $260,000 grant to the Prestera Center to establish a team in the Kanawha Valley that visits overdose patients and tries to convince them to get into treatment. That program is the second of its kind in the state. Kara Lofton takes us to Huntington, where West Virginia's first quick response team was launched in December.
At the Huntington Emergency Medical Services Administration building, a quick response team is reviewing their cases for the day.
I wouldn't approach her at the hacienda, which is the house she's been staying at. I would just watch for her.
Oh.
Because the house she's been staying at, the guy there will make it
harder.
Yeah. But okay. If we happen to catch her out and about, I think she's kind of at that stage. Because for her to call last night is completely unlike her.
That's Police Officer Chris Tremblay talking with her teammates, Sue Howland, who works for Prestera, and Larisha Cox, a paramedic. The city of Huntington launched a quick response team in December with the help of two federal grants.
So she overdosed last week.
Wednesday,
the on-duty supervisor called.
That's paramedic Larisha. She's the only full-time staffer on the team. The representatives from the police department and Prestera rotate.
She's kind of actually a lot compressed. At first, when we went down there, she wasn't all that receptive. But the more we talked to her, she kind of warmed up to us, especially Sue. The next day, we went back and spoke to her again. So we're just going back today to follow up with her again.
And so the first time you went, she decided she wasn't ready to go into treatment.
Oh, no. Yeah, she's still not ready. And we respect that. If somebody's not ready, it's best that we know that. It doesn't work if they're forced into anything.
Sue then chimes in from the front seat of the car. It's a little hard to hear her, but she says at least they're building rapport with both her and her family. The patient, who's 26, is living with grandparents. The grandfather lets us in, and the team winds through the house and down into the basement where the patient is still sleeping.
We just came by just to make sure you went and that you're still doing good.
Just touch base with you. Is there anything we can do, or...
Mm-hmm.
Good deal.
The woman shakes her head, becoming more animated as they ask about how well she's eating, how her headaches have been, and on her relationship with her grandparents. They're there for about 10 minutes. Then they leave. Bob Hansen is the director of the Huntington Quick Response Program.
We've been having a lot of overdoses in Huntington and Cabell County, and really, the big thing that stood out to many of us is, you know, what are we doing afterwards?
He saw an article about a similar program in Colerain, Ohio. They invited the heads of that program to Huntington, did a training, and loved it. So Hansen and several other key players in the local opioid response programs orchestrated applications for two federal grants. They got both. The idea is simple. Within 24 to 72 hours of an overdose, the team goes out into the community and makes contact with the patient to try and convince them to go into treatment. Colerain reported more than 80% of the people they visited were getting into treatment programs. Huntington was hoping for 1 in 5. But they're now in their fourth month, and Hansen says they're getting up to 40% of the people they engage with into treatment.
And if you think if we maintain that percentage over time, it kind of has an accumulative effect. So, you know, by year three, you know, we should be really, you know, hitting the people to the point of getting them into more and more into programs.
Okay, so where are we headed next?
Chris says for them, it's all about the little wins.
Okay, maybe you just didn't go use today. That's one day. Maybe you might have used, but because folks have talked to you and you were feeling good about things, maybe you just didn't go out and shoplift today. Okay, that's still a thing.
They visit another patient, then get into the car for one more try before Chris has to suit up for an evening shift on patrol.
Take a dress.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
So they didn't give you a real address?
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. common sometimes.
That's very common. Or a wrong phone number.
Wrong phone number.
Like one from Mexico. An area code for Mexico.
Got us.
As we leave the fake address, Chris sees a drug exchange.
Well, that's worth watching later today.
What, over here? That's a hot spot.
No, I'm pretty sure I just watched the hand-to-hand right there.
We go back to the station to drop off Chris for her shift. Charleston health officials are working on their own QRT with a grant from the DHHR in the coming months. Cabinet Secretary Bill Crouch called the move an essential part of the DHHR's state opioid response plan. The goal, he said, is to expand the effort until there's a QRT in every major city in West Virginia. For Appalachia Health News, I'm Kara Lofton.
Appalachia Health News is a project of West Virginia Public Broadcasting with support from Marshall Health, Charleston Area Medical Center, and WVU Medicine. Rodney Hundley is one of the best-known West Virginia basketball players. He garnered many accolades during his time in high school, college, and the NBA, and earned the nickname Hot Rod. But he might be even more well-known for his long broadcasting career with the Utah Jazz. A new documentary takes a look behind his public persona, offering a rare glimpse at his family life and challenging upbringing. Jesse Wright spoke with director Dan Lohman and producer Tony Caridi of Pikewood Creative Film.
Dan, let me start with you. What made you want to focus on Hot Rod?
I would say that Hot Rod Hundley is one of the most interesting sports figures in West Virginia for sure, but I think nationally he is also one of the most interesting, and I think that's overlooked. I read an article about Hot Rod that opened up some doors for me that showed a side to him that I just didn't know, and that was right about the time that he passed away. And that was just material that I was not aware of and I thought brought a side to the story that people would be very interested in. Hot Rod Hundley was known as an incredible basketball player at West Virginia University and was doing things on the basketball floor that no one else had ever done anywhere in college or pro basketball, and no one has ever done since. And no one will ever do again. It just will not happen. But besides that, he was an incredible announcer in the NBA. But besides that, when I uncovered the things about him on his family life and how he grew up in Charleston, that just really brought it all together.
So, Tony, do you want to add to that a little bit?
In the world of sports broadcasters, he was a pioneer. He became the very first former NBA player to become the lead announcer for a team. Normally what happens, former players become color analysts. That's where they go, and they talk about the X's and the O's of the game. No former player had ever become a play-by-play announcer. Although it's the same world, it's a different universe. And Hot Rod Hundley made a transition that no one had done before him. And not only did he make the transition to become a play-by-play announcer, he became a Hall of Fame play-by-play announcer and the very first former player to be inducted into the broadcast side of the Basketball Hall of Fame. He was the first ever to do it, and he was an incredible talent, both as a basketball player and as a broadcaster.
So, Dan, you kind of mentioned a little bit about that family aspect of his life. That's really what stood out for me as well in the documentary. Without giving too much away, can you talk a little bit about his family life and what this documentary explores in terms of that side of his life?
I think it all traces back to when he was growing up in Charleston. He had such a rough upbringing, and when we researched his upbringing, we would see he had a hard life, or we would read things. He had a rough life on the hardscrabble streets of Charleston. Well, what did that mean? Really, what was the context of that? So we put a lot of time into just doing that. And so I think through the documentary, we bring light to that situation and what did it really look and feel like for Hot Rod through those formative years, because it was really, really rough. His childhood was really taken from him, but somehow he came through it. And basketball was his way out of that. But later on in life, you can see how maybe the effects of not having a father really played into his family life when he had three daughters and a wife, and they paid the price for it. it was a tough situation for him and his family at times, and the documentary explores that part of it as well. So his three daughters spoke to us at length, and they were incredibly forthcoming with their thoughts. And I think that really is what made this documentary, their willingness to share with us their experiences and the time that they had with Hot Rod, because he wasn't around at times. And for them to say, here were all the good parts and here were the bad parts, that's what made this film, in my opinion.
You know, I think West Virginia doesn't tend to have a lot of heroes. And so the ones that we do have, the ones that make it to a national, maybe international stage, we tend to put on this pedestal. And we look at them through a very one-dimensional view. I'd say to either of you, do you want to talk a little bit about, you know, the documentary's approach to him and sort of, I think it really paints a complete picture of him, like you just mentioned. But was that part of your plan going into this, or was that just something that kind of came out of it?
Our intent all along was to be objective as possible. Our preconceived intent was not to do a fluff piece, because so many of those are always done, and it was certainly not to be unnecessarily negative. Our intent was to tell the true and accurate story from cradle to grave, and I think we've accomplished that.
I'll just wrap it up by asking, you know, what's the reaction been so far? You've had a premiere. What kind of feedback have you both got about the doc?
It's been overwhelmingly positive to this point. When we showed it at the premiere in Charleston, that was really something to hear the audible reactions of people, because for so long I've been sitting in an edit booth by myself with a computer, and there's been no reaction because it's just been me saying, is that the right edit or is that the right place to put that shot, and questioning myself a lot of times. So to hear people respond with laughter, with clapping, with roaring, with tears, that was really something in the premiere that I was not expecting at all. I was caught off guard, quite honestly, by that. But then the comments afterwards by folks, I've been really pleased by how folks have seen this, in terms of the takeaways are, I didn't know that about Hot Rod. That's been a big thing. And then also, they just felt emotionally moved by the piece. And that was the intention, is to say, this is the emotionally raw, open book on Hot Rod Hundley, and we're just pleased that people are taking it in.
Very similar thoughts. We had probably screened this in front of no more than 50 people prior to the Charleston premiere, and that was the biggest surprise, was to physically hear their reaction. And to be honest, the biggest surprise among the emotion was the sobbing. People cried. And it wasn't select gender. It wasn't just a ladies crying, men openly crying. Prominent people coming to us afterward and saying, I cried on several occasions. So to us, we always used to kid, we've been in business for 15 years. A great day for us is when people cry, when they watch something that we've done. Whether it's a tear of joy or a tear of sadness, that means that you hit your mark. And that's what this does. And as Dan said, that's all we're really after, is to try to evoke some form of emotional response.
Dan Lerman, Tony Caridi, I thank you so much for coming in, and congratulations on a job well done.
My pleasure.
Thank you.
That was Jesse Wright speaking with director Dan Lerman and producer Tony Caridi about their new documentary. Hot Rod premieres tonight on AT&T Sportsnet. You can also catch it at 8 p.m. April 16th on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, and Shepherd University. Our producer is Glennis Board. I'm Teresa Wills.